I will welcome you to the Flagstaff Insight Meditation Community Monday Night Sit. If you were expecting Brian, he is the regular teacher at this Sangha, and about once a month, I fill in and do a talk in his absence, and there's other teachers that do that you may have run into. My name is Kathy, and I've been a meditation teacher for a little over 10 years, and I teach meditation course at NAU every semester for faculty and staff and community members, and I also teach the same course at the local jail for inmates. And then I also do this once a month and an occasional retreat, both with Brian and on my own. So, and I'm a member of this Sangha, for those of you who don't know me, I'm a member of this Sangha. So welcome everybody. And one of the things I typically would be doing at this time in the spring is teaching at the jail. And the most important point, I think, that I try to get across to the inmates that I'm teaching is that this confinement is not your life, right? This confinement is not your life. And it's not because they're in jail now and one day they'll be out of jail. That's not what I mean by that. What I mean, it's whether they are confined in jail or they're outside, it's really central to be aware, to understand themselves as beyond the confinement of conditions and their preferences, which would be to be out of jail and to be with family and to be in some other circumstance. I'm posing the question to them. Can you see yourself or can you sense yourself beyond your wants and your dislikes and the conditions that prevail at the surface of life? Okay. That's the question that I'm posing a lot in one way or another to them. And I was thinking about how being in jail or being in quarantine right now, you know, what we're doing, we're really in the same boat. So whether you said in your little group that you're going to be happier or you're going to be unhappier about returning to your regular life, it almost doesn't matter which one it is. If what we do and what we think and what happens or doesn't happen is how we define who we are, then we're back in samsara and we suffer. And it doesn't matter whether one is better or the other is better, right? It's just that we keep being dependent on all these conditions to be happy, you know? So we like this one versus that one. Doesn't matter. It's that we need that, it's the dependence on those conditions. And when we think we're dependent, on condition, on particular things to happen for our happiness or our ease, it manifests in a lot of ways. It comes up in terms of that we're more fearful, we're more anxious, we do more planning, we do more complaining, okay? We kind of have to because we need those things to be true in order to be okay. And because there is more locking into thoughts and actions that simply revolve around our preferences, really, I like this, I don't like that, and the boundaries, I would say, of our little selves, right? There's often a sense, because we do that with this, there's often a sense of loneliness or separation that comes with that too. So there's often those feelings of anxiety, complaining, planning, loneliness, separation, you know, they're signs of that we're putting our eggs in the basket of surface reality. The key for inmates really is the same as the key for us. It's to be able to access the spaciousness in which the events, the conditions, the thoughts, the mind states occur, rather than think that all of those things, which I just call objects, are our lives or are ourselves. So our confinement, you know, along with all the mental states that go with that confinement, is not the jail and it's not the lockdown that we're doing now. It's being confined or reduced to our little selves of preferences and projects. The alternative to that, as I said, is knowing who we are in a deeper and more boundless way. And it is from this sense, from this really, that the sense that we're looking for, that sense of openness or freedom or warmth or acceptance, peace, that's where that comes from. It's knowing ourselves as the spaciousness, not as all the stuff. This happened, that person, that email, this, you know, that's samsara, right? It's the stuff that underlies that. It's the ability to touch that other level of our lives that really is the source of our freedom. So there are different roads to access this. And as you know, your practitioners, mindfulness is one of them, right? To be able to see events and sensations and thoughts as simply objects arising in consciousness, rather than that's me, that's my life. And it takes a shift to do that. That's what mindfulness, that's what the shift in mindfulness is. It's just to see it as something arising, not as you. But there's something else too, that we don't do that much in our Monday night group. And one of the things that resonates really well with the jail population that I teach is metta practice, right? Loving kindness practice. So what does metta have to do with being able to see beyond your conditions, right? And this is really where I want to take the talk today. I want to address that question. And when I look at metta in traditional Buddhism, it has a very interesting history, because the Buddha first introduces metta practice when his followers had set up camp in this lovely grove that turned out, so the story goes, to be infested with these angry spirits that who wanted them out, and began to create frightening sounds and sights and emit, according to the text, some very distasteful odors, okay? Hoping that this would make the monks leave. Have you heard this story before? Okay. And the monks became really terrified because they're afraid of things like ghosts and spirits and all of that, you know, which was very much a part of that time period. And it disrupted their mindfulness and concentration. So they couldn't even bring these things into mindfulness. And some, they say, from the text, some even developed fever and pain and dizziness in conjunction with the fear they were experiencing. And all felt that it was impossible to stay there. And so the monks go to the Buddha, and they say in no uncertain terms that they want to leave. So instead, the Buddha says, I would like you to try to stay, and I'm going to give you a weapon of protection. And the weapon of protection that he offered was the first time he ever taught metta practice. Okay, really interesting. Metta teaching and practice. And so this is what happened, and I'm reading from this text. For a while, they continued to experience feelings of fear and anxiety, while at the same time, they diligently practiced metta. Soon, there were no more fearful sights or sounds. And whereas the devas, the spirits, you know, had previously been hostile toward the monks, their anger and resentment disappeared when they began to feel the monks' metta. And in fact, feelings of respect, welcome, and even reverence began to be the deva's experience, along with the sense of being connected, like with family. And the inclination arose to provide an environment of safety, to protect the monks from particular dangers that might be lurking in the forest so that they could practice meditation peacefully. Then, what was hell became a divine abode. Okay, great story, huh? And in our interpretation today, they're probably, I mean, I don't like to say this for people who believe in spirits and devas, but to me, there probably weren't spirits in the forest who were turned around by love. It was their own inner sense which transformed, moving from fearfulness to ease, from being trapped in a little self to the spaciousness of being loving, okay? And really of unbounded loving, because they were loving people that they were hateful or fearful of. So it's kind of like a metaphor for your inner life, right, this story, for dealing with the mental state of contraction that happens when we are fearful. And really, you know, what's fear? It's like a mental attempt to control a negative outcome, right? And I was really struck because I read the story, you know, I was preparing for the talk and I went back to the story and I was really struck at how similar it is to my own journey, which is very in contemporary life right now. As a matter of fact, it's something that I just was involved in, my own journey into the issue of homelessness, and I'll explain. More than a decade ago, I took my dogs to Thorpe Park. Those of you in Flagstaff know Thorpe Park, early in the morning, as I did every morning at and it was 7 a.m. and it was still dark because it was probably November. And this day I saw someone sitting there. It was a man, an army jacket, baseball hat, cap hunched over, didn't look up. And I felt a sense of danger. And I wasn't sure if I should go into the gate of the dog park because that stops you from coming out a little bit. But then I saw he had a dog. And so I carefully walked in with my dog with my eyes on him the whole time and positioned myself close to the gate that would allow me to leave, thinking if he moves at all, I'm gone, right? That was our first encounter. And then I saw him again on a different day and again. And this guy turned out to be a homeless vet with multiple felony convictions. And we developed over the period of more than a decade, this happened in 2008, a deep and enduring friendship that led us beyond our wildest imagination at the time to write a book together. And the book came out last week, which is why I'm getting to the story. The Daily Sun did a story last week with both of us. And they were doing an interview. The story hasn't come out yet. And the reporter asked me, what has your friendship with Ross brought you? Okay. That his name is Ross, the homeless guy, right? And I kind of choked in answering. He's my friend and we go out and I enjoy his company. You know, I didn't quite know what to say. And when I stepped back from it a little bit, I thought about it and I realized, and I wrote him. Again, what my answer would be. And the answer was, my friendship with Ross has made me less fearful of homeless people in general or people I see on the streets and of strangers in general, with the result that my own world is a kinder, friendlier, more warm-hearted place. I have less fear, more compassion as a result of my relationship with him. And I realized as I read what I wrote to him in this email, that it was the exact same thing as the divas in the forest. You know, it's the same story. It's just told in a contemporary way. And it allowed me to see about the relationship between fear and love, or fear and kindness, or fear and warm-heartedness, okay? That they can't be there together. And one actually is the antidote to the other. And to a lot of, you know, not just fear, but aversion, hatred, you know, all kinds of things. And it's not just over months or years that operates. It's in moments. So I was reading this firsthand account of a meditator who was talking about how metta became more and more important as he became mindful of the physical sensations of emotion. So I'm going to read from his blog, right? One of the most helpful things I've learned in my mindfulness practice is how to direct awareness to the powerful emotions manifest themselves as physical sensations. When a feeling like fear or anxiety arises, I try to investigate it. What is the sensation like, really? What am I feeling? Where am I feeling it? How big is it? Where are its boundaries? Does it change as I observe it? As I began to practice this way, I was surprised to learn that if I listened to my sensations, they could reveal things I hadn't expected. And so he goes on to give this example. Okay. I'd been dealing with a stressful time at work and trying to be mindful and curious about the knot in the pit of my gut, which was getting to be a little exhausting. Just for a change, I did a guided metta meditation practice on my way to work. As I cultivated the warmth in my chest, an amazing thing happened. The knot in my stomach went away. And with that delightful reinforcement, I started doing more regular metta practice, and I noticed that the effect was consistent. If I was feeling the sensation of metta in my heart, I wasn't feeling the sensation of anxiety in my abdomen. The same thing, you know, all these different, this was 4 years ago, and today I'm convinced that, for me at least, it's not possible to feel love and fear at the same time. Can you hear how, from all these different quarters, how consistent the message is? You know, it's coming in all these different ways. Metta is a powerful practice that has the potential to counter fear, anxiety, aversion, and we can use it now for those suffering from the weight of social isolation, but also as social life returns, for those who feel they're returning to a world of troublesome people. Right? to do this, and it's going to be the a little bit more the focus of our meditation tonight, I want you to consider metta in a different way than you might now, okay? If you're like me, metta is often a 5-minute addition to sitting that I do when the sit is over, right? That's usually how we do this. Sometimes I even daydream my way through it, okay? The real sit happens and then the metta meditate for 5 minutes. And particularly if you don't like metta meditation, I invite you to consider it as a powerful practice for penetrating the boundary of, oh, I like this, so I do it. Oh, I don't like this, so I don't do it. Okay? That is so confining. Okay? This imprisons us and keeps us contracted if we keep following just these preferences. And that's the way we live our life. So as we work with the practice of metta, keep in mind that the intent, and this is something that it took me a while to figure out, the intent of metta is not about being a good person, okay? The intent of metta is about going beyond the boundaries of our own confinement within our little selves and our little lives, okay? How so? It's because as you go through, you know, the way that we do it, the traditional benefactor or self to the neutral person, to the difficult person, we're breaking barriers as we do that. If we're able to keep pushing ourselves to do that, we're doing an experiment of moving beyond the confinement of our preferences. Can you see that? Okay. And even beyond what you begin to see, beyond the mind states that go with preferences, like aversion, discomfort, boredom, grasping, we get to go beyond that too. So as one visualizes the persons of different circles, right, the different circles of distance from us, and we extend goodwill beyond the chosen circle or the set of preferential people, one is actually breaking the barrier caused by likes and dislikes, by attachment and aversion. And that's what transforms us in the sense we have of our lives. And that exactly is what transformed me, my relationship with homelessness, this guy with the knot in his stomach and his ability to deal with anxiety, and the Buddha's disciples and their ability to live in the forest under those conditions, okay? So I'm gonna invite us to start with metta tonight. And I won't do it the last 5 minutes. I'm gonna try to integrate it more into our sitting this evening. And I'm gonna do the practice tonight for metta will be just a little bit different in that I'm not saying 4 phrases, I'm saying phrases together. And I want you to think of this in a different way, that what we're doing in metta is generating a feeling in ourselves, okay? Like a lantern being fueled and the light getting brighter and brighter, okay? That image. As you feel it more strongly, the light gets brighter. And the phrases we use are only there to help generate the feeling of warmth or the light, okay? They're only there for that purpose. We're not saying them mechanically. We're actually trying to envision the people we're going to bring up and generate a feeling of warmth. So we're more attending to the light inside. Is the light there? Is it getting stronger? Am I feeling it? Okay. And so that's why sometimes people put a hand on their heart. And you can even, in the beginning, I like to think of it with the lantern that has flaps as I start to light it, right? With the feeling of my benefactor or somebody that I love. There's flaps over the lantern. So it's just inside itself. The light isn't coming out yet. And as the light gets stronger and stronger and you just begin to feel it, then you can lift the flaps and let it radiate out to other people. Okay. And so, and if the, you know, it works the other way too. If the light begins to feel cold or dim, and you know that happens sometimes when you're doing this, then just return to the fueling of it. Return to generating the light again, which can be going back even to a different person, to the person that you had very warm feelings toward to begin with, until the light grows in intensity. And then let it emanate, okay? Keep the fires burning in whatever way you know how. And we're going to see if we can maintain that sense of open acceptance, that warmth, that light for those that are close to us, but then we're going to move to people that are less close to us, okay? And see if that light can still radiate. So generating a sense of warmth and light, letting it build up inside, when it's sufficient, opening the cover and letting it move outward. Okay. So get in a comfortable position for yourself. And this won't take the entire, our entire meditation, but we're just going to start with it. And arrive here feeling some sensation, the sense of your hands on your knees or your lap, the sense of your feet on the floor, feeling maybe your hands their weight, their warmth or coolness, and really accepting things just as they are right now, with those sounds, with that feeling. Just letting it be, not having to do anything, just letting things be. And you might gently lower your eyes or close your eyes, visualizing your own face. Maybe your face in a happy and radiant mood. It can be you right now as you are, or at another time in your life, maybe as a child. Picture yourself happy, smiling. A time when there was happiness. Wrap yourself in that uplifted place of just happiness and ease. Noticing at your sternum, at your heart level, a sense of warmth, a sense of ease, or a sense of light that is there. Offer yourself the thought, may I be happy? May I be safe? May I be healthy? May I live with ease? And remember, the purpose of this is to see if you can generate a sense of warmth in yourself, a sense of light. May I be happy? Can you picture that? May I be safe? May I be healthy? May I live with ease? And sometimes as we go through this, you don't even need the whole phrase. You just really need the feeling. And sometimes I just use one word, happy, safe, healthy. At ease. And as you suffuse yourself this way in warm thought, become like that lantern with a light that begins to glow. The lantern may be covered right now, but you can feel the light become stronger and brighter. And as you do, you can open the flaps and allow the light to radiate outward. If it's not there yet, don't fret about it. Just leave the flaps closed, turning next to a living friend or benefactor. So think of someone in your life for whom you have warm feelings, a friend, someone who's helped you in life, and picture that person in your mind. And the more distinct they are, the better. Can you see them smiling? Can you see them in a happy frame of mind? And let your warmth for them radiate. Smile at them as they're smiling at you with the thought, may you be happy. May you be safe. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. And again, see if you can generate that sense of warmth and light in yourself as you look at them. Happy. Safe. Healthy. At ease. Can you see them laughing? The visualizations that you use should be clear. And the radiation that you're offering must be willed outward in a focused and a heartfelt way. So if you're getting hurried or mechanical or bored, the practice will be diluted. So work with that just the way that you would in mindfulness. Try to generate this authentic feeling in yourself. So next, visualize someone who you consider neutral in your life. It could be somebody that you're looking at in the Sangha who you don't know very well. It could be a neighbor, a colleague, someone at the grocery store who you don't have strong negative or positive feelings toward. Okay. And see if you can keep that same radiation of light and warmth and kindness to that person too. May you be happy. May you be safe. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. Picturing that person. As much as you can. Offer them those feelings, that the warmth of those gifts. Happy, safe, healthy, ease. And see whether the light is there right now. And if not, you can go back to yourself or back to that good friend, seeing them smile, seeing yourself happy. Before we move to the person who is difficult in your life. Someone who maybe you dislike or have a prejudice toward, or even just a misunderstanding with. Someone who's been difficult for you. And see if you can break the boundaries of your preferences. And even for them, offer them these words and mean it. May you be happy. May you be safe. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. I let go of my hostility toward you. May you release your hostility toward me. May you be happy. May you be safe. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. And now I will drop the guided meditation and we'll return to your practice for the last 15 minutes. But you can still keep the metta going if you like. And also you can offer metta or keep it going for the present moment and for yourself as you have difficulties, as things arise in your meditation. Have that loving kindness for yourself as you have a little ache or pain. Have that level of metta acceptance for the moment that you're encountering. It may change everything for you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.